हेलो फ्रेंड्स, आई एम प्रशांत कुमार पांडे। आई एम गोइंग टू रिकॉर्ड द नेक्स्ट चैप्टर, चैप्टर 5, 18th सेंचुरी। द फर्स्ट टॉपिक ऑफ द चैप्टर द 18th सेंचुरी एंड एज ऑफ प्रोज एंड रीजन। इंट्रोडक्शन। द 18th सेंचुरी, सेज लुइस इन अ शॉर्ट हिस्ट्री ऑफ इंग्लिश लिटरेचर, व्यूड एज अ होल हैज अ डिस्टिंक्टिव कैरेक्टर। इट वॉज द क्लासिकल एज इन इंग्लिश लिटरेचर and as such held and practiced and some basic principle concerning life and literature. Even then, one should avoid sweeping generalization. The temptation to generalize the 18th century particularly is hard to overcome. Few centuries, says George Sherburne in A Literary History of England, edited by Albert C. Waugh in inverted comma, have with more facility been reduced to a formal than the 18th new century, to be sure, have demonstrated more unity of character than superficially considered the 18th seems to have possessed. Inverted comma closed. However, it is fallacious to believe that there is a clear cleavage between the 17th century and the 18th. Observed Sherburne, the ideas of the latter 17th century continue into the 18th. At any rate, in 18th century there was the completion of the reaction against Elizabethan Romanticism. This reaction had started in the 17th century with Denham, Waller and Dryden. Pope and his contemporaries stood on the other extreme to Elizabethan Romanticist and assert in the age of prose and reason. As Matthew Arnold characterized the 18th century, now let us see how far the 18th century was an age of prose and reason. Dominance of reason. Pope and his followers give much importance to reason in their modes of thinking and expression. Reason may variously manifest itself as good sense, rationalism, intellect, wit, or just dry logicism. But it is definitely against all excessive emotionalism, sentimentalism, extravagance, eccentricity, lack of realism, escapism, and even imagination. It is easy to see that in 18th century reason was exalted to the shibboleth. Kazamian maintained in noted comma, the true source and the real quality of English classicism are of psychological nature. Its ideal, its characteristics, its method all resolve themselves into general searching after rationality. In noted comma closed, this search which started in the age of Dryden culminating in the age of Pope, Kazamian maintained in the this connection in noted comma, one may say that the age of Pope live more fully, more spontaneously at the pitch of that dominant intellectuality which during the preceding age was chiefly an irresistible impulse, a kind of contagious intoxication. Note comma closed. This reign of reason and common sense continued into middle of the century when new ideas and vices appeared. And the precursors of the English romantics of the 19th century appeared on the scene. All the important writers of the age, Swift, Pope and Dr. Johnson, glorified reason both in their literary and critical work, and conversely made unreason and bad sense the recurring targets of their satire. Swift in the fourth book, The Gulliver's Travels, for example, chastises Yahoos for being creature of impulse without reason or common sense. On the other hand, Hoyhamn, Hoyhamns, are glorified as tenacious adherent of these qualities. The satire on Yahoos is by implication a satire on the human being who resemble them to so closely. Thus, the fourth book is the most terrible satire on human lack of good sense and reason, imitation of the ancients. The glorification of reason also manifests itself in the form of the stress laid on the imitation of the ancient, that is the Greek and the Roman writer of antiquity. It was thought contrary to reason to be led by one's own impulse and eccentricities and to devise one's own idiom for expression. Too much of subjectivity was considered irrational. It was believed that a man should cultivate it unrefined and natural, just by subjecting it to the influence of classical writers. Much stress was laid on controlling and disciplining one a heady feeling, wild imagination, and personal way of expression with the help of study of the classics. We find in this century many translation and adaptation of the classics, or as also their imitation, not to speak of their rich echo in most work of the century. The 18th century, particularly its first half, is also called the classic age of English literature on account of two reasons which W.H. Hudson enumerates as follows. First, the poet and the critics of this age believed that the work of the writer of classical antiquity, really of the Latin writer, presented the best of model and the ultimate standard of literary taste. Second, like these Latin writers, they had little faith in the prompting and guidance of individual genius and much in law and rule imposed by the authority of the past. In 1700, Walsh wrote to Pope, "The best of modern poets in all languages are those that have nearest copied and ancients." Swift, in the Battle of the Books, showed the supremacy of the ancient over all the succeeding writers. Walsh's expression, "copied the ancients," should not lead one the belief that 18th century writers were no more than copyists, and such are open to the charge of plagiarism. What they copied was only the good taste and reason of the ancient. Well did Pope observe in inverted comma, "Those who says our thoughts are not our own because they resemble the ancient, may as well as say for faces are not our own because they are like our fathers." Inverted comma closed. Thus the ancients were to be respected as guides and model, not as tyrants. Among the ancient and the most respected were the Latin writer of the age of Augustus, and among them to particularly Virgil and Horace. The one reason why this age is called the Augustan age is this. However, the English ancients like Chaucer and Spenser were not respected. Addison, in his critical poem Account of Greatest English Poets, observe about the Fairy Queen, "But now the mystic tale that pleased of yore can charm an understanding is no more." Chaucer is dismissed as a rude barbarian who tries in vain to make the readers laugh with his jest in unpolished strain. Thomas Rymer savagely criticized Shakespeare, "The first fellow nature." A.R. Humphreys observed in inverted comma, "Basically, the critical injunction which gained the widest, indeed almost universal acceptance, was the call of follow nature." In the famous lines of Pope's essay on criticism, advice intended to writers, "First follow nature and your judgment frame, by her just tender, which is still the same. Unerring nature is still divinely bright, one clear, unchanged and universal light, life, force and the beauty, life, force and beauty must to all impart, at once the source and end and last taste of art. Pope's nature was not the nature of the romantics like Wordsworth and Coleridge. The Augustans were not much interested in forest, flower, trees, words, etc., which inspired poets like Wordsworth. Nor did Pope and his contemporaries mean by nature that nature which, to use the words of Louis I. Bradwold in inverted comma, Sir Isaac Newton has recently interpreted in terms of mathematical physics in the Principia Mathematica, 1687, they could hardly have gone to physics for a literary standard, and they were moreover all aware that their concept of nature attended Newton by centuries. For them, nature indicates what Bradwold calls a rational and intelligible moral order and universal, according to which the various experience of mankind could be confidently and properly valued. Nature of them meant, in the word of A. R. Humphreys, the moral course of the world, or as ideal truth by which art should be guided. Man's subjective feeling were thus discredited and sacrificed to the law of nature. As Basil Willey, A. R. Humphreys, the moral course, the word, or the ideal truth of the by which art should be guided. Man's subjective feeling or thus discredited the sacrifice to the law of nature. As Basil Willey observed, the 19th century background in the individual mind was carefully ruled out of the whole scheme. Even in the field of religion, reason and nature ruled the roost. This was the age of spirit of natural religion or deism, which believed in the existence of God but disbelieved in any revealed religion. Not accepting Christianity, people were also talking about natural morality. The doctrines of the reason loving deist were repudiated by orthodox theologists, not passionately but with reason. Rules. The 18th century emphasis on nature often took the form of emphasis on the rule formulated by the ancient. These rules were supposed to be the universal applicability. Nature was the criterion of propriety, and the rule of ancient were to be respected as they, in the words of Pope, or nature is still but nature methodized, and further. Nature, like liberty, is best restrained by the same law which first himself ordained. The tendency to adhere the rules went against the eccentricities and the irrationalities of individual genius. The 18th century was in fact an age of formalism in all sphere: literature, architecture, gardening, and even social etiquette. A critic maintained, in inverted comma, just as a gentleman might not act naturally, that is in accordance with his impulse, must follow exact rule in doffing his hat or addressing a lady of adjoining room, of offering his snuff box to a friend. So the writer of this age lost individuality and become formal and artificial. Against enthusiasm and imagination, the adoration of reason naturally implied a keen distrust and enthusiasm and imagination, which could lead a man of ludicrous extreme with extreme. 18th century literature is consequently avoid the enthusiasm element, passion, mysterious suggestiveness, and heady imagination which characterized romantic literature. These romantic characteristics were discredited by credited as they led on the violent nature. If a writer abandoned himself off to emotion or impulse, or let his imagination run away uncontrolled, the result could be disastrous for his writing. Sir Richard Blackmore observed in the essay on epic poetry, an essay upon various subjects, that the writer of old romance were seized with an irregular poetic frenzy, and having decency and probability to contempt, filled the world with endless absurdities. Swift, in letter to a young clergyman, expressed his distrust of the passionate eloquence of a particular preacher. "I don't not see," says him, "how this talent of moving and passion can be of any great use toward directing Christian men in the conduct of their lives." In section 9th of A Tale of a Tub, he sacrificed the Puritan enthusiasm by representing it as wind. Likewise, the Earl of Shaftesbury, in his letter, concerned enthusiasm, lusts, religious enthusiasm, and fanaticism. Prose. The 18th century was doubtlessly an age of great prose, but not the great poetry. When Matthew Arnold called it an age of prose, he suggests that even the poetry of the period was of nature of prose and versified prose. It is he who observed that Dryden and the Pope are the classical not of our poetry but of prose. Among the greatest prose writer of the age or edition, Steele and Swift, they took English prose from the antiquity of Burton, Brown and other to the balanced clarity and simplicity of the modern time. They made prose functional, using it not for impressing but enlightening the reader. In the field of prose, the reaction against romantic extravagance and involvedness started by Dryden was brought to a logical conclusion by the prose writer of Age of Queen Anne mentioned above. In poetry, however, the age has not to so much excellence, imagination and passion came to be replaced by the ideals of clearness, perspicuity, then beauty of expression. These ideals appear to some as the ideals of good prose, not good poetry. Regularity, order and artist control are certainly desirable, but no substitute for poetic talent or inspiration. One may be tempted to ask with raw Campbell, "They use snaffle and the curb all right, but where's Wobbly Horse?" Comparing the poetry and the prose of 18th century, Long observed in inverted comma, "Now, for the first time, we must chronicle the triumph of English prose, a multitude of practical interests arising for the new social and political condition, demands expressing not simply in books, but more especially in pamphlets, magazines and newspapers. Poetry was inadequate for such a task." Hence, the development of prose of the unfettered word, as Dante calls it, a development which astonishes us by its rapidity and excellence. The graceful elegance of Addison Ashe, the terse vigor of Swift satire, and this artistic finesse of Fielding novel, the sonorous eloquence of Gibbon's history and the Brooke oration, these have no parallel in the poetry of the age. Indeed, poetry itself became prosaic in his respect, and it was used not for the creative works of imagination, but for essays or satire, for criticism, for exactly the same practical end as was prose. The poetry of the first half of the century, as typified by the work of Pope, is polished and witty enough, but artificial. It lacks fire, fine feeling, enthusiasm, the glow of Elizabethan age, and the moral earnestness of Puritanism. In a word, it interests us as a study of life rather than delights of inspires us by its appeal to the imagination. The variety and the excellence of prose works and the development of serviceable prose style, which had been begun by Dryden until it served express clearly every human interest and emotion. These are the chiefly literary glories of the 18th century. The topic, the An Age of Prose and Reason, over.